Oh, well, guys, welcome to episode, I don't even
26?
Know. Is it 26 or 27?
26.
I was having a debate on the way home from work with myself about whether it was 26 or 27.
Sure it's 26.
It is 26. Welcome to episode 26 of the 51-yard line. Clearly, things have not changed in the couple weeks that we've been gone. taping this on a lovely Monday evening in Southern California. A lot of things to talk about today. So, oh my God, I didn't even do introductions. Jesus, man, I'm slipping. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, the insatiable Drew Willers.
I just want to let everybody know that I took two or three games in a game of 21 today. So just to let you know, I'm up on my shit right now.
Proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
To my other left, Zoran Dragic's new best friend, Christian Snyder.
Well, you know, I got the third of those 21 games, you know. And that was the it was a pretty big blowout. I felt good about it.
Well, and to my third left, clearly the star of their 21 games today, Stephen A. Cravens.
What's going on?
Oh, man. Sounds like you guys had an eventful afternoon.
It was a good
time.
Indeed.
Well, speaking of basketball, let's start with some basketball. As you guys know, I was a couple weeks ago, I was quite drunk in Las Vegas. But in between getting quite drunk and losing a lot of money at the craps table, nice. I got to experience my first NBA Summer League, which was awesome.
Good times.
It was a lot of fun, man. It was a lot more crowded than I was expecting. It was a lot much higher energy atmosphere than I was expecting from a bunch of games that really, I mean, obviously don't matter in the scheme of how your team does once the season starts, but I was just really surprised at how many people were there and really, really hardcore rooting for their squad. It was awesome. Saw about five games over the course of 36 hours or so, and
nice.
That was really cool because they were just it felt like AAU basketball at a tournament. Like it was just one game right after the other from about noon every day until about 10 every day, so it was pretty awesome.
Who were you most impressed with?
I was really impressed with Zach LaVine
from
Minnesota. He, Summer League opened on that Friday that I was there. It would have been the 11th. It opened, and the first game was a packed house because it was number one overall pick versus number two overall pick. It was Minnesota versus the Lakers. And, of course, Vegas being only a stone's throw away from L.A., there were plenty of rowdy Lakers fans wanting to see D'Angelo Russell perform.
How was he?
Ugh.
Yeah.
In the first game, oof.
Pretty rocky.
Rough.
Yeah.
Like bad shooting, bad decision-making.
Couldn't hold on to the ball, turned it over. I think he had more turnovers than he had points. It was
sorry, Mitch.
Apparently that was the only full Lakers game that I got to see. But apparently he did turn things around from there, and he got better. But he still wasn't what you want to see out of your first round lottery pick. So I was pretty surprised at how mediocre he looked. I was really impressed with obviously second year Zach LaVine. I saw some good things from Karl Anthony Towns, but man, is he soft on the defensive end. You can't foul out in Summer League. He had 10 fouls.
He's got to lean. I mean, he's got to bulk up.
And that's what we were saying for months before on this podcast. It's clear he's got to bulk up because it was no more clear to me than watching him play that game because good Lord was he getting pushed around.
The nice part is he's still only 19.
Right, so right. He's got tons of time. Absolutely. I mean, they pushed Dwight Howard around his rookie year.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's no bearing on how he's going to be as a pro. It's just it's just my immediate observation. It's just wow. I mean, I know it's summer league and you're a little more lax on the contact that you're doling out, but man, 10 fouls in probably 25 minutes of action is not a good start.
And that is the question mark about him, that we talked about right before the draft happened. You know, because he was sharing the front court with Willie Cauley-Stein, who obviously is an incredible defender. You know, how much did he kind of like, did Cauley-Stein's play kind of hide some flaws on Towns? Or he got pushed around a lot, committed a lot of fouls, but did his instinct seem bad? Like, was he playing good fundamental defense? Or like guys just going around him, or he was like biting on him?
He got burned a few times. Out of position, you know, not going straight up on defense, to contest the ball, and he just wasn't. The defensive portion of his game is really going to be what they need to work on, because offensively he looked pretty solid.
I heard that he's got a surprising amount for how young he is and how relatively new he is to playing in the post. He's got a solid repertoire of post moves.
From what I saw, yeah, I would agree.
That being said, you know, obviously Summer League's not going to be what it is in the NBA, and you've got crafty veterans that he's going to be banging and bumping around in that are probably going to I would assume would be able to pick up on some tips that, you know, and figure out exactly what, you know, just, you know, tipping his hand where he's going to go with it on the block. But that was one thing that I out of everything that I read about Summer League, other than Tyus Jones being tremendously, tremendously underwhelming and Zach LaVine very, very, very sharp, the only other thing that I read was that Cat was very, very sharp and had quite a bit of he had a solid amount of post moves, that he wasn't just falling back on bringing it down low, up and under, that kind of thing, that he was very, very good, and very good on both sides of the block as well.
Definitely.
That it wasn't, that it didn't seem like he was more dependent on his right hand or his left hand, that he was pretty comfortable on both blocks, which is good, and I think that's a good starting point for a 19-year-old big man.
Definitely, so, definitely.
But yeah, who else did you see?
I got the chance to watch your Celtics, Christian, and the Portland Trail Blazers.
Don't get too excited.
Hey, man, the Celtics knocked it out of that park that game.
Yeah?
I don't know if it's because the Celtics are actually pretty decent or if it's just because Portland has a god-awful summer league team or had a god-awful summer league team.
I'll bet.
We were sitting, like, me and my buddy Drew from my job and his friend Josh and I were sitting really close, like right, basically right across from Dame Lillard, who was sitting at the end of the bench in his jeans and T-shirt, and man, he did not look too pleased to be there right at that moment.
Probably
so
pretty salty about losing his big man LaMarcus Aldridge.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's not fun to be in Portland right now.
But there was nothing fun to watch about that Portland Summer League squad. There was no one that stood out as like being any kind of help to come October of this year. On the other end, though, Celtics look pretty solid. Marcus Smart looks a lot more comfortable handling the ball.
Good.
He daggered some of his threes, which was huge.
Good,
because he needs to get a lot
really
better.
Spotty shooter.
Yeah, he needs to get a lot spotty more at consistent at shooting the ball. And for the majority of that game, he was pretty consistent. I was pretty impressed with what I saw from him.
Did you get a look at Terry Rozier?
Yes. Yeah.
How did he strike you? Because I was bummed when I found out that was our pick.
He wasn't anything to get your hopes up about. I saw the one game, small sample size, but
of course.
I don't know. He didn't stand out at all. No. It was the Marcus Smart show, really, like when it really boiled down to it. Like he's clearly the guy, because he was on the floor the majority of the game. He's clearly the guy they're trying to really like mentor and groom in this offseason right now, because he's going to be the guy that can potentially help the Celtics immediately.
Right.
Besides that, got to see a little bit of the Heat. You know, they looked okay. Juwan Howard Jr. is not a very good basketball player.
Did Justice Winslow partake at all?
Justice played Friday night. I didn't get to see him. And Saturday night when I was at the game, he was in his street clothes, so he did not play Saturday night. I don't know. He He's pretty good at sitting on the bench and looking uninterested in the huddle when that's going on.
Nice.
So quality. That might be a good sign.
Steve, did you hear anything about Mr.?
I think that might change when Dwayne Wade's calling.
Oh, no, for sure.
But
I know, but your first NBA action, I would hope you'd be a little more engaged. Like, he wasn't engaged. He wasn't even, like, looking at the huddle when it was happening.
Yeah.
Have you heard or read anything about...
No, I mean, for the big thing about Winslow so far is that he's got a lot of talent, but he's got to learn how to wrangle it. He's got to learn how to make smarter decisions, and he's just got to know when to pass the ball when the shot's not open. Yeah. I mean, but because that's a big – I saw some of the footage of him playing, and he was taking some shots. They were like, you know, I don't know what you were seeing there. I don't know what made you think that was going to go in. There was, like, two guys in your face. You know, there was other guys that were wide open, so – just rookie mistakes. I mean, gotcha. You got to remember, you're not in college anymore. You're going up against the pros, and these aren't even the pros you're going to be going up against. You got to be smarter. You got to be faster. You got to be more of a team player with guys who can get those shots done if you can't.
Definitely.
So, kind of like a, was it like the baby scorpions? Like if you get bit by a bigger scorpion, you know, it's okay. Because like they inject like a small amount of venom into, but a baby scorpion like injects way too much into it. It's like, it's almost like he's putting too much of an effort out there to really be the guy. It's like there's other guys that can get the shots done. It's a team sport. It's not just about you. That's what I heard about Justice Winslow.
That was a next level metaphor. Right?
Yeah, you heard it here first. Justice Winslow is a baby scorpion.
That is solid.
No, he's just putting too much out there where, like, you know, it's a team sport. There's other guys that are open that can take the shots.
I've been saying this for years.
Exactly.
So... that's what he's got to, and it's not like, you know, Justice, we're not counting on you to, you know, really carry the team. We've got other guys that are way more capable than you are, can do a lot more damage than you can. So I hope in the season when it's going on, if there's a situation where he's got the ball, the clock's draining, there's a couple guys in his face, I'm going to take the shot. If there's other guys open, give it to Dragic, give it to Wade, give it to whoever else the fuck open. If you really have two guys or more in your face, do not take that shot. It's a rookie mistake.
Just a quick question for you. Just recently, it was reported that they were going to deal their last first-round pick, Shabazz Napier, to Orlando. Does that concern you at all about Riley's ability to draft? Is it worry you a little bit about the ability to groom these guys? Do you think that there's enough veteran leadership that can bring these guys up to speed? Or what was the issue you felt with Napier, and do you feel like that's going to
cost-effective decision? I mean, like, we are way above the we could be the first team to pay that luxury tax, and they do not want to be the first team to do that.
Gotcha.
So getting rid of them frees up some cash, also gives you, I mean, what did they get? A very well-protected second-round 2016 draft pick. I mean, they basically gave him away for nothing. It's to avoid paying that heavy tax. But as far as him as a player, I don't think it was fair, because what I heard is that he had improved a lot, especially after the surgery he had. He had improved a lot with his ball handling and his decision making, at least in the practices and the scrimmages. But I think also it had a lot to do, if Shabazz had stepped up a lot more in the regular season and put up more, and if he had averaged more than 5.1 points a game, I think he would have had a chance of still being around. But I think also this is a much deeper thing for Riley, because they drafted him because of LeBron. Mm-hmm. When LeBron became a free agent, Shabazz was his favorite player that was available in the draft. And they traded up to get him in an attempt to kind of keep LeBron there, and then for LeBron to hightail out of there. It's almost kind of like a reminder, the only reason you're here is because, you know, because of a guy that spurned us and is, you know, and Riley hates him. I mean, Riley absolutely can't stand the guy. Wade's a different story, but Riley can't stand him. So to see Shabazz in a Heat jersey not producing the numbers that they believed he should be producing, taxes, whatever, but that also, that factoring in, that kind of reminds him that we drafted you because of LeBron, they wanted to get rid of him.
Gotcha.
And, I mean, and you asked me this morning about the depth of point guard. Who do we got? Gorn now and Chalmers, and I believe that's it. So
I mean, I guess,
and you're looking to deal Chalmers too. So
yeah, I mean,
he's on the block. But now it sounds like this allows them to keep Birdman, which is a good rim protector. They need that.
Yeah, Birdman had a terrible season last year though, so let's hope that he rebounds. Because I mean, last year was just a nightmare. I mean, we were a mobile hospital with all the injuries we had. He was no exception. But even when he was healthy, he was not the Birdman that we saw in the 2012-20. Well, we got him in the second half of the 2013 season, but he was not the Birdman we saw throughout the 2013-2014 season and the latter half of the 2012-2013 season, because he was explosive. Like, he was what did Stephen A. Smith call a neutralizer in the paint? That's what he was doing. And this past year, even when he was healthy, he wasn't stepping up. He was
it wasn't the Birdman that I know. So hopefully he can rebound. But, I mean, I don't know. I'd feel better about keeping Chalmers because I still think Chalmers is...
Well, he's familiar with it. The one thing he's got is his familiarity with the system and his exactly. familiarity with Spo.
And he's a fan favorite. He's a fan favorite with you know the fans. But in the end, it's like, what can you do on the court? I still think he gets off really tough shots, and he can contribute on. Maybe not every night, but he has contributed a lot of points to games that we should have lost. But because he stepped up and made some very tough threes, you know he's. He's a good player when he's a good player, but when he's not on point, he is kind of a burden. But again, it's what in Riley we trust. I'm just rambling now, but
no,
we'll see. We'll see.
Gotcha.
I think we should keep.
Yeah. All right. That was kind of all I had for Summer League. But seriously, anyone listening, if you get the chance to, I can't speak for Orlando Summer League or anything like that, but man. If you can take a couple days off and go check out Las Vegas Summer League next year, please do. It was a very surprisingly fun experience. Like I was expecting it just to be like, all right, it'll be cool to see these guys in the off season just run up and down the court a few times. But no, like everybody was playing hard. Everybody in the stands was screaming like it was a normal game. It was awesome, and the beers are cheaper.
And that's how I feel. I mean, it's cool that. There are those experiences. So that's how I felt about Minnesota Vikings training camp in Mankato. Mm-hmm. If you're a sports snob, if you're a diehard, experiences like that are always great.
Definitely, so, definitely.
Excellent.
One other thing worth Summer League though. Winners of the Summer League championship.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Spurs, led by head coach Becky Hammon.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Which has started really, cool. really good dialogue, I think, because, I mean, obviously, you know, first woman to have a high position like that on the bench in the NBA, and it's not for nothing that it's the Spurs. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Greg Popovich, I think, and I'd love to hear what you guys think about this, Greg Popovich is not a publicity stunt guy. He's not about making a statement on gender equality. He's there.
He hates the publicity. Yeah. His least favorite parts. Very clear.
If you work for him and he trusts you with you know the Summer League job, because yeah, this is developing new talent. These are future major players for you know these teams. A lot of them. It means you can get the job done.
Very true.
And I don't know. Did you get a chance to see the Spurs play at all when you were there?
I didn't get to see the Spurs, but I was sitting like right in front of Becky Hammon actually during the first during the Timberwolves Lakers game. I just happened to turn around at one point and I'm like, "Oh, it's Becky Hammon. Oh, cool." Sweet. So she was there. She was analyzing the team. She was clearly taking notes on how the Spurs and how the Wolves and the Lakers were playing. So
yeah.
she was not there to fuck around. She was there to play, like win.
When you see it, I mean,
if you
watch highlights, SportsCenter, that sort of thing, she is very. Very intense the huddles, and
she chewed him out a couple
times. She gets your players to listen. She makes them. She doesn't give a shit that it's Summer League at all. I could see, and you were there. I don't watch a lot of Summer League. I watched what I saw on SportsCenter. I could see it wouldn't be difficult for me to see other guys that have been there, done that, to not necessarily be all fire and brimstone about it.
Most of them weren't.
She is very, very passionate, and it seems like she's. Obviously, she has garnered the respect of the league because now she's being talked about as a serious head coaching candidate. Executives supposedly have at least started conversations with her and the Spurs organization about you know just relatively what the availability might be in the future, that sort of thing. But you can see. Her players not only respect her and respect when she's, you know, giving her spiel, as you should with any coach, they're dialed in and listen, but they seem to have a really genuine appreciation for her as a friend, too. Like you saw after they won.
Locker
they were,
room celebration.
Yeah, they were having a great time laughing and joking, and I think that that's important. I think far too many times we see coaches at all levels make it too much about I am your coach. You are my player. I think that they don't allow themselves, and it's difficult. I mean, to a degree, it's a business. But she seems to have the ability to connect with players, which is not something that many coaches at any level can do. And mm-hmm. that's why you hear just horror stories at, like, the collegiate level, whether it's basketball, whether it's, you know, football, you know, guys going off on tirades and swearing and throwing balls and berating their players.
Yeah.
For her to make the jump from, because she was a very good WNBA player, correct?
Very good.
Very, very
first
elite.
First team all WNBA a couple of times.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. So she's very, very elite. So right off the back, and that's what's cool about basketball is it's sort of, I mean, obviously, there are, I'm not saying that there aren't differences, you know, in the game, but it's very universal in the sense that if you've got a general understanding of the game of basketball, it doesn't really matter who's on the court, man or woman. Like, if you have an understanding of what's going on and the general concepts, you can be successful.
Right. Definitely.
And she just seems absolutely, and as she should, she's an elite basketball mind. She seems absolutely fearless, and as you brought it up, it doesn't hurt when you've got Coach Pop in your corner.
Nope, that's the thing. If Greg Popovich thinks he can do it, you can do it.
Yep.
And that's why. And I think that the fact that it's the Spurs both helps her and hurts her in her cause in a weird way, because it, you know, obviously she's more than worthy to be a long-term NBA assistant. The question about the head coaching thing, I don't doubt that she can be a head coach. She, you know, the way that she called out her players, that she could relate to them, like you said, but also that when she got mic'd up in that one game, she's like, stop getting cute out there. She had no problem calling them out, and they responded to that. But the thing is, these are Spurs players. The Spurs draft quality guys.
Yeah.
The Spurs sign quality guys, and they all respect Greg Popovich. I'm not, you know, I'm not sure that there are that every other NBA team has quality character guys who will respond to a woman that way, you know, that will respect them. You know, I mean, well, listen, when they brought it, I don't know if you guys saw the NBA documentary about the first female referee in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Charles Barkley, Cedric Maxwell, they said horrendous stuff. Michael Jordan, who's a pretty open-minded guy, said it's a man's game and should stay that way. You know, they got a lot of pushback, and those aren't necessarily, you know, the worst guys. You know,
yeah.
You know, because it's the Spurs, there were, you know,
luckily society in general has progressed a lot since then.
Right, but I do wonder sometimes about, you know, certain athletes. About you'd have, you know,
yeah,
owners want to take a chance on that.
Mm-hmm.
Building off of that, it's going to be interesting moving forward because right now she's working with a lot of young guys.
Yeah.
Kids that are our age and younger.
Who are trying to make the team, by the way, and don't want to piss Pop off.
Exactly.
Very true.
It's going to be really interesting moving forward to see if she gets the type of opportunities that it seems like we all feel like she deserves and the NBA feels like she deserves.
Right.
How is she going to deal with veterans?
Right.
With guys that have been in the league upwards of 10 years. I mean, even, you know, plus 5 years, you know, in how they're going to respond to her, you know, how are you going to deal, how is she going to deal with egos? And granted, that has nothing to do with her being, you know, a female, because there's plenty of male coaches that have a hard time wrangling in egos.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Because she seems to be the pioneer of this new movement, It's going to be, I do feel like it's going to be important to see how she responds to things like that.
And think about this. Okay, so say that she's the head coach of your Timberwolves right now. Say, how would you relate to a guy like a Kevin Garnett? Massive ego.
Absolutely.
Really vocal.
Yeah.
You know, and has been in the league for 18 years or something like that. You know, how do, you know, one can make the case that he's got far more seniority on her. Say she is a head, she's got a couple more years of assistant coaching experience and has a lot of high ratings from everybody about that, good feedback. You know, does he answer to her? Does it work out? Does he question her authority? Does he do what LeBron did to Blatt, another first timer?
I would not surprise. I do like KG. I like what KG.
But I use other because he's a top tier professional veteran.
Absolutely.
But he is a vocal guy with an ego.
It would not surprise me if she would get pushback from somebody like him. The only thing, at the end of the day, I will say this about KG and his ego: he really just wants to win.
No,
like,
that's why I brought him up because he's not selfish, but he does have an ego.
Exactly. So as long as she, I mean, just like any good head coach, just articulates to her players, whether they're veteran leaders or first-year rookies, look, I am only, no matter what it is I'm trying to do and trying to teach you, tell you, only thing I'm trying to do is try to get this team in a position to win. And, you know, you're going to have guys that will respond hopefully really well to that, and then you'll have guys probably like Rondo that aren't going to give an S. And they're just going to be like, you know.
Well, Rondo doesn't listen to anybody, man or woman.
But yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah, no, it's super, super awesome.
Oh, listen, we can all agree this is a big step in the right direction.
Very
for
cool.
Sure.
Without question.
Very, yeah. Very cool.
All right, let's move on. Let's transition over from basketball to football. The New Orleans Saints Oof. Announced that they have cut Junior Gallette.
After a big contract,
video surfaced of a 2013 incident where he not only assaulted a man, but also assaulted a woman with a belt. Clearly just a horrible incident.
Did you see it?
I watched it today.
Yeah. You guys see it?
I haven't. You're describing it, though.
It's bad.
Disclaimer, just if you're going to watch it, just be prepared to cringe. It's Jeez. Not good. It's not good.
Jeez.
But well, yeah.
Now he's gone. Good.
So that marks the second high-profile player to, in some way or another, depart from the Saints in the past few months, the first obviously being Jimmy Graham going to the Seahawks. So my question to you three, are the departures of Jimmy Graham and Junior Gallette sort of the first couple nails in the coffin that is the Sean Payton, Drew Brees, New Orleans era?
You guys want to open this one up?
I think it's already... They've already had some nails.
I agree.
This last year?
I agree.
They were horrible.
I mean, that's why...
True.
I mean, without getting too much into this, but there's a reason why when I made a bet with a certain somebody on the winners of the NFC South that I picked Carolina over New Orleans. Brees, Drew Brees, who I love... I mean, I adore as a quarterback, as an ambassador for the NFL... quality guy, respectable individual, obviously an elite quarterback, probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer when the time comes. I'm seeing him deteriorate physically faster than even Peyton Manning. And the one thing Peyton Manning has always had to keep, I mean, like it's really astonishing that Peyton Manning's been able to keep up the quality of play that he's been able to for as long as he has. One thing Peyton has always had, it seems like no matter where he's been, and you can speak on this, he's always had a pretty quality offensive line on the pass protection front. Regardless Sure. of not having a good running back, he's usually been able to keep himself upright. Brees didn't have that this last season, and he's in a division with some pretty darn good defensive pass rushes. He's also the size... of, like, I mean, he's like my height. He's like 5'10". He's a little quarterback. Not that that makes any difference. Russell Wilson has had a ton of success. Obviously, Brees has had success. You continue to take the types of hits that he's taking. And if you, like, I don't care who you are. You throw as much as guys like them throw, the arm is going to lose its luster.
Sure.
He just doesn't seem to have it as much anymore. He doesn't put the same zip on the ball. And even aside from that, like, you and I were watching the they had, like, a 2014 season in review, NFL sound effects, and just watching some of the decisions that Brees was making, trying to force passes
yeah.
that, granted, he might have been able to make no problem 2 to 3 years ago. He was not
or with a better receiving
exactly
core.
Well, that, too. But he was not fitting it in windows that he usually does.
Yeah.
And the guys were undercutting routes and taking it the other way. So I would say that this... losing Graham, and now having to cut Gallette, because you have to cut Gallette.
Well, of course, yeah.
And that was a good move. They had to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they don't find themselves in the bottom of the NFC South this year. I'm pretty sure they're going to finish last.
Below Tampa Bay?
Yes.
And the Falcons?
Tampa Bay picked up Junior Gallette. So he's going to be playing the Saints twice now, super pissed off.
Tampa Bay going with those character guys.
Absolutely.
When you're that much of a dumpster fire, you got to do what you got to do, yeah. I guess.
And I guess when I look at Tampa, I still see You know, Tampa's not great. I still feel like the arrow's pointing up. It remains to be seen what kind of quarterback Jameis Winston's going to be. But at the same time,
he's doughy as fuck. Wow. Does it worry anyone else that he's just doughy?
Yes.
I guess I don't know. I've heard and read things. He does look pudgy, but I've heard so many reports where that's been understated, that that he's not really as pudgy.
I mean, I know he's not like out of shape, but it's just like he's just doughy. Like
I get you. I guess what I'm getting at though is he's got Mike Evans to throw to.
Maybe Vincent Jackson has a resurgence.
Exactly. And I don't know for sure, but I would like to think that defense is going to be a little bit better this year. There's certainly going to be a better team, and I can't imagine Jameis Winston being worse than what Josh McCown was.
Or Mike Glennon, for that matter.
Or Mike Glennon. So that alone, I'm sorry, Breeze is losing it. He's still going to put up some he's still going to have some games where he puts up the numbers, but he's not going to be what he was. They still don't have a running game. Their defense, as far as I can tell, didn't really make the necessary adjustments to put him in a conversation where you're...
Especially not now.
Absolutely. I mean, so you lose your supposed best pass rusher. I'm pretty sure the Saints are going to find themselves in the bottom of the barrel. Yes. Looking up at Tampa. Not that Tampa's going to be that much better, but yeah, they're finishing third or fourth, barring significant injury to Atlanta and Carolina.
So, is this the last year of Sean Payton and Drew Brees?
I could see it being that way, yeah. I really do.
I mean, what's their contract situation look like?
I think Payton goes before Brees.
Oh, no, I absolutely... Oh. That's, you're just saying that's like, pretty much what I mean, but I just mean, like, is this the last year of that era?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yep.
What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
it's been going downhill for them ever since.
Yeah, this last year was pretty bad. I mean, and then to take into account who they had last year versus who they have this year, the lack of talent. Yeah, I mean, I don't see it being any better. What was their record? They had 79 record last year, right? Yeah, I don't know, man.
No, because Carolina...
Carolina was 7-9, right?
Carolina was 6-10-1.
6-10-1, and they went to... they were 6-10.
Carolina was 6-10-1.
No, they were 6. They were 6-9.
Carolina was
7-8. I'm sorry, 6-9-1. Math.
Carolina was 7-8-1, I think, yeah. But, well, anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, yeah, man, it's...
Because they crushed... They destroyed the Saints the last game of the season in the Superdome.
Yeah, that was really bad.
But you know what's
crazy?
That
was a winner-take-all game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they housed like two picks on Breeze. Yeah. So
you know that 49ers game where we went in there and basically stole that game. After that, they were never the same in the Superdome.
Oh, absolutely.
The Bengals came in there and kicked their ass. The Panthers came in there and kicked their ass.
Oh, you mean the game where you weren't allowed to talk for a week about the 49ers after that?
It was pure luck. That shouldn't have happened. but still, like, I mean, like, it was like it was opening of. I mean, that's probably not a good analogy to use in New Orleans, but it was you know, the gate busted open, and
there you go.
Yeah,
first.
You
wanted to say it.
Yeah,
we all knew it.
Yeah. But yeah, so I don't see it being any better. And plus, I think the Falcons are the team in the NFC South that are going to be the ones to really surprise people. I think Dan Quinn's actually going to turn that defense in some. Probably not elite, but I think it's going to be a very competent defense.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I think Matt Ryan's going to have a bounce back year. But yeah, I mean, talking about it, I've never really actually thought about it. I mean, I've been reading the reports of various, you know, players either going to another team or getting released or what have you. Yeah, I mean, now to actually let it kind of sink in, yeah, it could be.
Seems like he's lost that locker room as well. Like
Drew Brees?
Sean Payton.
Well, I mean, you could even, like, Sean Payton might have lost you. Like, Brees was, now, I don't know if it'll ever come out who... in particular was at the forefront of dealing Jimmy Graham to Seattle. That being said, Breeze did not... I mean, he posted... As soon as he found out it happened, he posted a Twitter pic of one of his baby kids with a Jimmy Graham jersey on. So you knew he's not happy.
Oh, that was his guy,
pissed.
Man.
Oh, he's
and it's the only receiver he's got, really.
I mean, Brandon Cooks could come along, but yeah, I would say consistent veteran, knows the offense, knows Breeze, knows what Breeze likes, absolutely. I mean, it's...
Yeah, what do they get for him anyway? I mean, like...
Draft picks?
A whole lot of nothing?
I mean...
Nothing
that's... They got Max Unger, didn't they?
They got Unger. Oh, Unger's good. Okay. But, like, you need weapons if you're going to be throwing the ball.
You need weapons if you're going to run the type of offense that Sean Payton wants to run.
Yeah. Max Unger can protect Drew Brees all the hell he wants, but if Drew Brees has no one to throw to, it's not going to make a damn lick of difference.
He'll just run around with nobody to throw to for a few more seconds every snap.
He'll just have a few more seconds before he throws another bad interception like he was doing all year last year.
I mean,
I think that the Drew Brees era of the Saints is done.
I think I think Peyton will bounce before
Peyton will bounce Brees. After this year, and then Brees will have one more year there.
I mean, Brees talking about how he wants to play to 40. I mean, that's great and all. I'm sorry, man. It ain't going to happen. I mean, he can play to 40, but he's not going to be playing at anywhere close to the level he was when he won that Super Bowl.
Well, here's the question I got then. If this is the end of the Drew Brees era in New Orleans, does he play somewhere else?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah. You don't think he retires?
I'm sure somebody will give him a shot.
You don't think if he gets that beat up where he realizes I really can't do this anymore?
No, because, I mean, no, I don't think that he would do that.
I don't think that's his mentality.
No, and also, let's look at, I mean, there's plenty of teams that would welcome a veteran for 3 years like Drew Brees. Just like Denver welcomed Peyton Manning with open arms. Like, you know, at least one of these rookie or second-year quarterbacks is just not going to pan out, and, you know, we could see Drew Brees in a Raiders uniform if Derek Carr doesn't pan out, or we could see him...
Houston Texans.
You think, like, the Texans...
Or the Texans is even more likely scenario.
Right away.
The quarterbacks that I've seen the Minnesota Vikings grab at the end of their miserable rope, Donovan McNabb, like, when it's bad and it's desolate and the market's bad, you'll take whoever you can with a good resume.
And these days, the market's always bad for quarterbacks.
Speaking of once elite, is there anything going on with Michael Vick? Is he still a free agent? No one picked him up yet?
I mean, nobody's picked him up. He's apparently, I think he posted something or somebody posted something about how he looks good in a workout. I think it's pretty much over at this point as well.
It's probably for the best.
And he may find himself, you know, we could have a situation where, you know, a certain quarterback situation goes absolutely pear-shaped dumpster fire, and they, you know, you got to make a move. I mean, that's essentially what ended up happening. The Jets didn't, if you remember, the Jets didn't take Vic till super late. So, I don't see Vic doing too much.
So we're pretty much unanimous that it's pretty much over.
Yeah, I think it's. I thought it was I had a feeling the start of it was going to be. I also just think the fact that the defenses in the division that he plays in are getting better. I think Panthers defense is awesome. I've got such a football boner for that defense.
And the Falcons, man, I'm telling you.
I think the Falcons will be much improved. Like you said, Dan Quinn is no pushover. He knows defense.
One could say he's the man that's making Russell Wilson look good all these past seasons.
Well, and you could also say the fact that, you know, Roddy White wasn't healthy at all was one of the main reasons why the Falcons really couldn't get anything going offensively. And it was, I'm sorry, that was just poor offseason front office move by trying to bring in Steven Jackson and thinking he was going to power your run game. That guy has not been able to stay on the field consistently the past 3 or 4 years.
Mike Smith's he's not coaching, right? I mean, like, he never went to another team in any capacity.
I guess I don't know for sure.
I was just thinking about it. I was like, what happened to him? And I don't think.
Up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He's done. Toast. Pulling the Thibodeau.
Crispy.
All right. I don't really want to talk about this, but Christian, you know what we have to talk about, at least for a second.
Oh!
Which is the horribly, horribly disappointing end to the United States Gold Cup.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to talk about it, but I'd be remiss if we did not at least address what the shit is going on with Jurgen Klinsmann's squad right
that
now.
That is, I mean, for those of you guys who don't know, Jamaica knocked us out of the Gold Cup.
Hell,
the semifinal, 2-1. Yeah, I know, right? I mean, and
you used that joke yesterday.
I did.
It was funny then. It's less funny now.
let's put it this way: when you say, "Oh my God, we lost to Jamaica," and you have that stereotypical thing like Jamaica won at a sport. Yes, that is exactly what you should be feeling. Jamaican soccer has absolutely no tradition. They've never been good. They've never even sniffed a Gold Cup victory. We've never lost before the finals.
This was their first time out of group stage, right?
Yeah. It was they beat us. We didn't. I mean, I didn't see the full game, but I saw a lot of highlights. And like, you know, they jumped out early. I mean, we had some unlucky things, but we just were completely out of sync.
We can't finish.
And we can't. And the thing is, and after the last month where we beat Germany and the Netherlands, we assumed this Gold Cup was ours for the taking. We thought we were going to go out there and win, and we didn't. We screwed it up. Mexico, our hated rival, they took it home easily because they took care of business against Jamaica.
Because they finished.
They finished. And here, the bottom line is this. I have to say, throughout the World Cup last summer, I actually was defending Jurgen Klinsmann. A lot of people jumped on about the Landon Donovan thing. And yeah, hindsight's 20/20. Nobody knew Josie was going to get hurt. So obviously it would have helped to have another striker on the thing. I defended Jurgen. I thought he had a good vision for building this thing. He needs to be... He's hopping up and down now because he's on the hot seat. He's on the hot seat now. This is a bad loss. And I don't think he should... I don't think it's... A lot of people thought they should have fired him ages ago. I don't think he should be on the chopping block quite yet. But he's got to get results. And he's got to get them now. Because this team was supposed to be trending upward. And we just took a huge step back.
What I can't stand about Jurgen Klinsmann is he makes decisions out of spite. And it's very clear, especially after the reports that came out over the weekend, that even after all this whole Gold Cup fiasco, he's still not guaranteeing that he's even going to give Tim Howard a shot to come back
in
September. For those of you who don't know, Tim Howard took some time off the past few months from the national team just to spend some more time with his family. He's got young kids. He's 34 years old. He needed some rest and needed a little more time with his wife and kids. And he's announced that he's ready to come back and ready to help this team make the next step toward the 2018 World Cup. And Jurgen comes out right away and goes, there's no guarantee he's going to get a shot at this team. He makes decisions out of spite. It's why he didn't put Landon Donovan back on the team.
Right, because Landon Donovan's always had problems with coaches. And
it's why it's why the U.S. might miss out on the winningest goalie in U.S. history, I believe.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Without question.
It's not even close.
Couldn't even be close, right?
Be
yeah, exactly.
And,
so,
and a guy who can actually play consistently in a European Premier League, you know? So he's good on the international stage. We all saw what he did against Belgium.
Yes.
I mean, and listen,
it disgusts me that Klinsmann, he's not an American. Like, it's not conducive to whether he's a good coach or not. I just think he's got this really, like, old school, European mentality where he's got all this pride, and it's like, if you're not with me this entire time, then you were never with me at all, which it just doesn't make sense. Like he's alienating two of the greatest U.S. soccer players in history, and what it's gonna do, it's gonna cost the U.S. wins, it's gonna cost us a good shot at the World Cup in 2018, and more than likely, it's going to cost him his job.
Yeah, I mean, like that. Let's put it this way: here's high noon for Jurgen Klinsmann. I can pick the day on October 9th in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. We're playing the rubber match CONCACAF playoff against Mexico. They had established a couple of years ago that whoever wins the last two Gold Cups, if they split, they have a playoff. We won in 2013. They got this one because we cocked it up. So we're going to play them in the Rose Bowl for basically the berth to the Confederations Cup.
Yes.
So what that means is we get to go, if we win this thing, we go on, we play a bunch of, you know, major teams. We're going to play Germany. We'll play teams like Argentina. That's huge. We need to be in that.
Yes.
And we need to win that game. It's a winner-take-all thing. If he loses that game, he should go. That's what I think.
Agreed.
We got to win that game. It's in our soil. We always win at home against Mexico.
But if he doesn't put Tim Howard back on the team in September, I think he should go then. I don't think he should even make it to October 9th. If he's willing to jeopardize his team's immediate future just based on he doesn't like Tim Howard's recent decisions.
One thing I will say about that, just because the September thing, I'm with you. I think Tim Howard obviously needs to be our goalie. If we get into the Confederations Cup, he obviously needs to be our
goalie. He needs to be our goalie on October 9th.
But he hasn't played for months. I'm worried about him being rusty.
Okay.
Guzan's been out there and he hasn't been bad.
That's fair.
I don't put any of this on this guy with our new goalie, Guzan, because here's the other stupid thing that Klinsmann did. He sat our veteran backs. He put in Brooks instead of Beisler. Now, we all love John Brooks for the freaking header he got against Ghana, but Beisler's our rock on D. He brought in a bunch of newbies trying to break them in. A bunch of dudes, by the way, who played in German academies. and he's sat the American veterans, and he's trying to build for the future. But you also got to win now, because if you don't win at Confederations or CONCACAF, it's going to hurt our team's confidence, and we might screw up in qualifiers.
Has Tim Howard responded at all to what Clint's been said about his...
I don't believe so. The story just broke yesterday, so I don't think Tim Howard said anything yet. But
I'm going to say, as far as I've seen from Tim Howard, he's an elite athlete. So if
absolutely.
He's the
only U.S., as Christian just alluded to, unless you can think of someone else, he's like the only United States goalkeeper I can think of who has had any major role in a European, like a top tier European
United States player. I mean, Donovan played at, I think, Everton for a little while, and it was not impressive. I mean, Tim Howard was a multi-year starting goalkeeper for Manchester United when they won the league.
Yep.
You know, that's not nothing. He played against the best players in the world.
It's just going to be a huge... Klinsmann has already made a lot of mistakes in the past year, and... if he doesn't put Tim Howard on the team, that's the mistake that should cost him his job, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Howard should, if he doesn't play, should look at working out as a wide receiver for some football teams, because that guy's an athlete.
He's also 34. He's 34. So it might be a little past that.
That's
the only reason why, I mean, I think it's bogus that Clemson's not even at least letting him compete for the position, or considering not letting him do that. That doesn't make any sense. But the thing is, I do understand why he might.
He won't even let him earn a spot.
Because he'll be
right.
He won't. I mean, that's kind of what he was alluding to. That's what I got from it.
That's garbage. Listen, I'm fine with him saying it's not a guarantee that he is our starting keeper.
Sure, that's
fine. He's got to compete against the guys who have been there. You leave, you got to earn it back.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I'm sure he would.
He would absolutely.
I'd be shocked if Guzan or whoever beat him out. Hmm. But the thing is, I think the other one's Hamid, who's been good. But the thing is, I understand Klinsmann is trying to build long term. He's got like a 10-year plan going. You know, he wants us to develop young talent, because the U.S. loses because our best athletes don't dig in from a young age as soccer players. He's trying to get people who've gone through academies. He's trying to develop young talent now. But the problem is, Tim Howard still got it. He made that clear.
Agreed.
And you can't blow it all up. You can't abandon the roots too soon. That's what he did with Donovan. He's like, you're going to give me a problem? Fine. I don't need you. We're not going to win this World Cup anyway. Let's get some new players and get mileage on them.
I don't like the mentality at all. All right. Screw that. Let's move on. The next thing we'll have is whether Tim Howard actually ends up on the team come, September?
Yeah, so, I'll be shocked if he's not on the team.
He damn well better be.
Yeah. A lot of, I mean, you guys know more about it than I do, but a lot of people were shocked when Landon Donovan
did. Tim Howard would shock me more.
Yeah.
Only because just Tim because he is, Tim, I mean, he's the man between the pipes.
And like, he's got more left in the tank than Donovan did. Donovan retired after the World Cup.
Right.
So, I mean, that was supposed to be his last hurrah. And also, Tim Howard doesn't have locker room problems. Landon Donovan is noted and established as being a selfish player.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gotcha.
Who does complain publicly about management and stuff.
Gotcha.
And Klinsmann's a German soccer player. He doesn't put up with that.
All right. Let us... what else do we need to talk about? I guess let's finish up with a couple of these baseball moves. Drew, you want to take that away?
Yeah. Well, I guess the biggest one so far was... Johnny Cato going from the Cincinnati Reds to the Kansas City Royals.
Good Lord.
For three left-handed pitchers. That's what happens when you've got a really, really good farm system.
Rich get richer.
I'm pretty certain now at this point there's nothing that's going to keep the Royals. Obviously, they're going to win the Central.
Come on, dude. I think the Indians and the White Sox have a great chance at coming back.
I think, but even beyond that, I think they're a lock. Barring significant injury, though, I think they're a lock to get the ALCS, too. I just don't.
Because
at this point now, their bullpen is stacked. If all their current rotation needed was to make it at least five to six innings, once they get through that, the bullpen's got it.
And Cato averages almost seven, so he averages almost like an inning and a half above what the average is for the Royals right now, it's huge. It just bumps up their average innings from a starting pitcher standpoint by a mile.
And the really solid part about it is Cato now going from the NL to the AL, he didn't have to bat anymore. He didn't have to run the bases. I mean, not that, you know, that was really a big emphasis on his game, but now he gets to come in and focus on what it is that he does best. And right now, prior to making the shift from the NL to the AL, he was the best pitcher in the National League. Obviously, Clayton Kershaw has really turned it on. He's starting to look like Clayton Kershaw, and Zach Greinke obviously looks really good. But the one thing that the Dodgers have that Cato didn't have, and the reason why it doesn't stack up in the wins and losses column, I mean, Dodgers have firepower on their offense. The Royals definitely have firepower. Even after losing Alex Gordon, they still, I mean, four or five All-Stars that started for the AL? That's insane. And that was after they took the whole, like, rigged voting out of it. Right. I mean, no, the Royals are absolutely, I can't think of, I mean, obviously the Yankees, they look tough right now, but if they're not walloping on, you know, the Twins who are choking away games late, or walloping on, you know, what has been a wildly disappointing season for the Boston Red Sox.
For last night.
Yeah, that was something else. But you know, any team's gonna catch fire any night. I mean, but I will say another move. And it's going to be interesting. I think my ALCS pick right now is going to be the Stros and the Royals. And the Stros made a big move. Well, the Stros made a big move picking
things
up...
things you wouldn't have expected 3 years ago.
Well, that's the thing, man. They've done an amazing job. There's a reason why, I guess, the Cardinals felt it was necessary to hack into their database.
Can you imagine if we got Cardinals-Stros for the...
That would be pretty sweet.
That would be unbelievable.
I would still like a rematch of last year's. Not a rematch, it was the Giants and the Royals. It would be cool to see Royals Cardinals. I would really like to see that. I think the ALCS is going to be the Stros, and I think it's going to be the Royals. And the Stros made a huge move and basically put it out there to the rest of the American League. Hey, we're not waiting for 2016. We're not waiting for 2017. We're going all in right now.
Yep.
And they went out and they grabbed Scott Kazmir from the A's, another solid pitcher. And what's it? They got the dude with the beard, is it Keuchel? Is that how you say his name? He's another solid starter.
I believe that's
so. That's two aces in a rotation. Generally, when you can when you can find a way to get guys every 3 or 4 days, guys that can go 7-8 innings and hold teams to 2 runs, and you're hitting the way the Royals and the Stros, that would be awesome. Stros and Royals would be great, would be amazing for baseball. Mid-market teams that have built their franchises off of their farm system, because the Stros did it all through the draft. Same way with the Royals. We've been waiting 4 years for the Royals to finally, like, it was like 3 or 4 years in a row where they were like best farm system in baseball, and yet they were finding themselves in the bottom of the division year after year. Well, all of a sudden, halfway through last season, they got out of the break, and then they all of a sudden realized they're a really good club. Really good club. And that confidence just carried over. And they came flying out of the gates this year. They're running away with the Central. And that's the other thing.
Scary how much better than the rest of our teams in the Central.
Oh, it's nuts. And they might run into cap issues down the road. But that being said, if they're just going to keep...
But they're playing for this year. It's clear.
But if they're just going to keep pumping out the talent that they're pumping out of their... Like I said... When you can get a bullpen like they have, when you can get relief pitching as clutch as the Royals have, that is huge. It's huge, and it's huge against National League teams, because you get to a point, I mean, that's when you have to go into a National League house, you know, for game 7 or whatever it might be in the World Series, and you gotta bring in a pinch hitter for your starter. You know, that's usually a big worry for, you know, American League teams. To bring guys out of their bullpen. Royals don't have that issue, because they've got so much depth with their pitching.
Yep.
They just don't have to worry about it. And now they really don't. They shouldn't. I mean, unless Johnny Cato just struggles in the American League, which I doubt. Especially if he gets to play. I mean, he's going to play the Twins a handful of times. They're having their struggles right now offensively. They're going to play the Indians. They're going to play the White Sox. I just think the Royals
abysmal
are
hitting White Sox. God damn it.
Out of the National League... It's unfortunate, but the National League just isn't that exciting. The Cardinals are just running away with
it.
I don't really see any other team. I can't think of one. I mean, and the Dodgers are coming on strong now, yeah, but they still, to me, there's this sense of...
They can't win when it counts, though.
Absolutely,
so.
And Kershaw still hasn't proven, despite how hot he can get in the regular season and how just dominating he is right now. Same way with Greinke. They can't pitch in the postseason. Nope. And until they can prove that they can carry these kinds of performances into the postseason...
We're going to see another first-round exit.
Absolutely. No question. And they do have hitters. Adrian Gonzalez is a monster. He's excellent.
He's playing out of his mind.
Puig still... Puig has the potential, obviously, but he's a head case. I just don't see any way how the Cardinals don't make it to the World Series.
Agreed.
The Giants... are not the same club they were last year.
It's an even year, remember?
Sorry,
it's an odd year.
Yeah, but they're not as down as they normally are.
No, that's
true. I mean, I actually watched them this past weekend. They're not bad. I mean, they can still get hot.
And that's the thing is, you know, Buster Posey is one of the best catchers we've seen since, you know, late 2000s Joe Mauer. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's definitely, I would say, an MVP candidate for the NL.
And, of course, Mad Bum.
Mad Bum is very good. I just don't...
It's not enough to get it done.
Well, you just don't have that... Their bullpen still has its struggles. They've dropped games late. Hell, they've done it again. They did it against the Padres, like a week back. It was... Yeah. The American League is going to be very exciting to watch. I think right now, I would say AL West is going to be the Angels. AL Central is going to be the Royals. AL East is going to be the Yankees. First wild card spot, as of right now, is the Minnesota Twins, but I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't. They're starting to fall off. They're losing games late. Suddenly, Glenn Perkins, who was perfect, 28 of 28 saves, is finding ways to lose games.
Yeah.
It's been a hell of a ride. I didn't think it was going to last this long, but starting to come back down to earth. I don't have too much of a problem. I could see... I could see Oakland making a run at it, but now that they've dealt Kazmir, I think they're pretty much out of it at this point. I don't know. The wild card races will be fun to watch, but I don't see anybody... pulling a Royals, making a wild card, and then just
either.
Making a straight up run all the way through the AL postseason.
Yeah.
It's going to be the Strohs, and it's going to be it's going to be the Strohs, and it's going to be the Royals. So it'll be fun to watch. It'll be a really fun stretch to watch in baseball. So
final question, and then we're going to get out of here.
Sure.
Where does Cole Hamels end up?
I guess if I were a betting man, I would say the Cubbies. Sounds like they really want him. I could also see, it all depends on what the Cubbies are willing to give up. And for the first time in a long time, they've been pretty competitive, and their farm system isn't a dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're really ready to give up the farm or even a little bit of it to get Cole Hamels. But he could go to the Mets, although I don't see the Phillies wanting to give him to a New York club like that. I just don't see that happening.
My bet's on the Cubs, too.
I would say the Cubbies. And I also think Hamels would love to play for Joe Madden. I think he would. That Joe Madden is his type of manager. I would say the Cubbies.
All right. Well, guys, unless anyone's got anything else, that's going to wrap it up for this week.
Today?
No trivia today. I'll have a couple questions. I'll have two questions for you guys next week. I believe is someone in the lead?
Yep.
You are. This guy. Christian.
Yes,
yeah,
someone
you,
is.
You got a 1-point lead, so we'll see if these other guys can catch up next week. So as always, for Steve Cravens.
Thanks for listening.
For Christian Schneider.
Thanks for stopping by.
For the insatiable Drew Willers.
Thank you very much, guys. Also, we may have a new logo coming, so keep an eye out for that.
Yes.
Yeah, so
do that.
Exciting!
I'm excited.
Yeah,
you'll hear it coming.
You will keep.
Think that's how logos work.
I mean, but they just heard it now.
That's not the logo.
I'm just saying, like
hearing.
you'll have to go online and check it out. You're not gonna be hearing the logo. Is my point. Just seems like a funny thing, logo for podcast. It's making a sound joke. Move on.
Oh my god. Okay. Well, I'm Tyler Berry, and then we'll see y'all next week. Yeah, bye.